like to welcome to the Caregiver Smile Summit Susan Krausen. She's a certified dementia practitioner with over 12 years experience developing systematic approaches to recognize and identify loss and behaviors due to dementia. She served as an Alzheimer's Association Legislative Advocacy Ambassador, has been a guest speaker for conferences and special events. She was Director of Programs and Advocacy at the Alzheimer's Association Mid-South Chapter, Manager of Baptist Memory Care Center. Currently, she's a dementia specialist for the neurology clinic, providing comprehensive cognitive assessments and certified testing administrator for Alzheimer's clinical trial. She was a primary caregiver for her father, who died from Alzheimer's. And as we were speaking before we started the official interview, she's been there and done that and back. And that's why, through her own experience with caregiving, she can speak firsthand to this topic of compassion fatigue. So Susan, welcome to the Caregiver Summit.
Thank you, Anthony. It's great to be here.
All righty. So why don't we just tell our viewers and listeners, what is compassion fatigue?
Compassion fatigue is a state of being beyond caregiver burnout where the clinical signs are a complete insensitivity to the natural course of empathy in the caregiving process. What's interesting is empathy, too much empathy, is the reason for caregiver burnout and caregiver compassion. For folks that are in a long-term caregiving setting, so whether they're professional caregivers in a community or nurses in hospitals or family members at home, where we're not able to get away from it, we carry it with us because we're so tied into our loved ones and caring and making a difference. But the problem is, doesn't matter what we do, we won't truly affect the outcome. And so it's an emotional roller coaster, and the compassion fatigue component is actually a serious health condition. So we want to know about it so we can avoid it.
Thank you. And, you know, it's interesting. I do a lot of work in patient experience and resident experience, and there's been a whole, dialogue around teaching empathy. So it's interesting, this idea of having empathy within you naturally and now teaching it. And then now you're kind of saying, well, if you go over the cliff with it, you can go into another area that you don't want to go into.
Right.
Yeah, that's interesting. So what are some of the signs and symptoms of compassion fatigue?
All right. So let's talk about the signs and symptoms before that. When we're burnt out, we're fatigued, we may feel depressed, we may feel tired, we may lose weight, we may gain weight from eating as a stressor, we may begin to slightly abuse our addictive products like smoking or eating or drinking alcohol to try to cope through the journey ourselves. That is the sign. Those are the signs of burnout. Compassion fatigue goes further, and it actually becomes a place where a person's empathetic abilities become numb. And then we become numb to ourselves, where we don't recognize our triggers and our own bodies and hearts and minds calling out for relief, and we literally don't know how to stop, we don't know how to relax, we don't know how to regroup and get back to ourselves. So we're stuck in this for some folks it's an adrenal fatigue, and if you've ever experienced that, it's like your body is on traumatic high alert all the time and there's never any relief. That's the serious part of it.
So let me ask, and you were sharing this before we started, kind of, you know, before we get to the next question, what are the consequences of this kind of, behavior in, you know, your relationships and in your caregiving?
So when you're a caregiver at that point, you become insensitive and your heart doesn't hear the actual information your loved one is telling you, so you miss out on cues. It can seriously affect your personal relationships. So if you're a caregiver at home with a spouse or partner or other family in the home, you can also like miss the cues of their needing you and push them aside because the care of your loved one becomes your paramount concern. Always jumping at the moment you hear something or you think that they might fall or cough or whatever it is. So you begin to ignore the relationships that are most important to you. And then to yourself, you ignore the signs of your own health deterioration. And the statistics say that family caregivers can die before their loved ones because of health conditions. So when your body is stressed out and your immune system is broken down, you're going to be more susceptible to illnesses.
Yeah, I'm a firsthand witness to that. I became caregiver to my mom after my sister passed. And so we moved her from Florida to North Carolina to be with us. So those statistics are real. People doubt it. The caregiver does often pass before the one they're taking care of. So how can you possibly avoid compassion fatigue?
All right. The first is to recognize the signs of caregiver stress and caregiver burnout. The handout that I'm providing, the giveaway, has several different caregiver checklists. If you see that you fall into any of those warning signs, you have to listen to them. Probably your family, probably others are giving you feedback, but you have to listen to yourself based on those evidence-based tools. An objective evaluation is saying you've gone past the norm. And then what I like to say is, if you think about having your loved one live in a residential community where they would be providing the services you are, you can think very businesslike and objectively to realize their staff that they hire would either be on 3 8-hour shifts for maybe five days a week, or maybe their weekend shift and they're 12 hours a couple of days a week. So if you would target the amount of time that you spend towards direct caregiving to 8 to 12 hours a day, if you would look and see, you're probably doing more like 20 hours a day. You've got to bring that into balance. So when you see the symptoms and you see the evaluation showing you, and then you look at the pie charts that I have, it's very simple. It's what shifts am I going to take in a 7-week period of time or a 5-week period of time in order to maintain my health, my sanity, and live so that I can continue the caregiving journey?
Right. Great advice. So are there treatments for compassion fatigue?
There are. I tease and say it's time to do drugs. So if you need an anti-anxiety, get one. If you need an antidepressant, get one. Know that there are medical treatments for mood stability to be able to help you. Don't think that they're going to be long-term. Utilize them as long as you need to. But sometimes that's what helps us get through that difficult time. And the treatment mostly is self-treatment, is determining that the empathy that you are demonstrating to your loved one, you must demonstrate to yourself. If you think of the picture in an airline, they always say, put the oxygen on yourself first before you help a loved one. That it's just matter of fact. You have to get more objective about the necessity to take care of yourself. And then what happens is, as you honor yourself, you can move into a place of joy and confidence and caring that enhances the caregiving journey.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, you have to take care of yourself because, you know, it can be, even when you're not hands-on, as you said, you know, when you type the inventory and it's 20 hours, it could be 24 because you go to sleep, you could be dreaming about it, or you're not sleeping right because you're thinking about something, or, you know, you're waiting for the next text or the phone to ring or whatever it is. And as hard as it sounds, and I'm speaking personally as you are, you have to have some fun in the journey. You have to make the time. I was talking to one of our other experts, a gentleman named Peter Rosenberger, has a wife with some disabilities. So he's a different kind of caregiver. His caregiver is a long-term journey. He's been caring for her for 30 something years, and they're in their 50s. And so his state is caregiving. And so he's had to learn how to balance it all. And I think that's what our caregivers need to do as well. They have to take care of themselves, which kind of leads to the next question. Is it possible to maintain a balanced approach to caregiving?
Absolutely. And hopefully folks that are listening haven't gotten to this place of burnout. But even if you have, even if you're into the fatigue component, go seek your medical treatment. But look at this, especially if it's a long-term or has been long-term and you know that it's going to continue, to look at it as your job. And no employer, you would never accept a position with an employer that would force you to work the hours that you're working now. So narrow them down. And then your question is going to be, who's going to take care of my loved one? And that's the big question. I've included a survey that gives you 11 different pointers on when it's time to move to the status of assisted living. So you are providing the assisted living in your home right now. You can embellish that by hiring in-home care providers or family members or trusted individuals that you can pay or will contribute time on a regular basis, dependable basis. In that role, you are the manager. So you're not providing as much relief as you might need. And what you may determine is after this amount of time, wherever you are in your care journey, it may be time to allow yourself and your loved one to benefit from living in a residential community. I'm not saying it's for everyone. My heart was dead set on, I am going to care for my dad. He is going to pass in my house. But what I found is I wasn't able to do it. And it wasn't that I wasn't good enough. It was that his care needs were more than I could do or was qualified to doing. And as a result, I just looked at it from a business standpoint and said, I can't do this. And I was able to get him in a memory care assisted living, and he was so happy. His behaviors became very agitated at home because I wasn't caring for him like he needed it, but I didn't know it. I didn't know how. And when he was in the proper care setting, then our roles changed back to daughter and dad. And it was beautiful. It was temporary. It was at the end of his life. Alzheimer's had a predictable path. I was aware of that. For those that don't know what the predictable path is, it may be even more important that they seek out professional assistance either in the home, temporarily outside the home, maybe with adult day services programs where you can take your loved one to be engaged, or full-time residential care.
Well, great advice. Well, Susan, I really want to thank you for being part of the summit. Any last words you want to impart to our caregivers? We certainly want to tell them to take care of themselves, to reach out for help. Part of that is to making some hard decisions about assisted living and when it's time, and just to even ask for help is important too. So anything you want to conclude with?
I do. I want to tell you the smile I have on my face is the memory of the joy that I had for doing a job well done with my dad. And I made lots of mistakes. I got really sick. I had compassion fatigue, but I stopped. I regrouped. I did everything I'm telling you. And it was a joyful journey. I would not be who I am if I had not done that. I applaud you for your efforts. My website, SusanKrausen.com, has additional information. Look for information online with your disease type. There's many supports. And reach out to Anthony. He's trying to save the world with video, with at-home training. Reach out and get the support you need because it can be done. It can be done well. And you can feel like you were a successful caregiver. So I encourage you in your journey.
Well said. I don't know if I'm saving the world, but I would echo what you just said about, you know, our caregivers need to pat themselves on the back. I mean, you know, I had a mom who had medical issues, not cognitive, and she was a stubborn Italian woman, and she was 94 when she passed. And so she gave me a run for my money. You know, people may be familiar with Catholic guilt, that we Italians experience. And so I never quite heard it from her necessarily, but I tell you, after she passed, my doctor actually it was her doctor who became mine because I saw how amazing he was with older people. Basically took the time, and this is something to be aware of, took the time to do a couple things. During the caregiving journey, he actually had me come back after my annual physicals a couple times because he was worried about my stress level, even though I was in good shape. And when the journey was done and I had my first visit with after him, he made the point of telling me, "You did a great job with Mom." And so we don't hear that enough. And so I want to echo Susan's kudos to all of you, because you're taking the time even to watch this or listen to this. You're taking time for yourself, which is good. And so we commend you. And Susan, once again, I want to thank you for being part of the summit.
Thank you for having me.